Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night. I'm Hunter, joined by Brody, remotely Silas in the studio, and we've got a pretty exciting show. We had some disc golf last week. We got some end-of-season awards to go over, some new contracts, some player retirements, all kinds of stuff coming down the pipeline here. But before we get into the show too much, Brody, I want to just shout out the Christmas sweater you're rocking right now. That thing looks pretty sick. A little sneak peek of some stuff coming to Foundation's website here probably in the next week or so. So be on the lookout for that. But New World Championships just went down. First off, funny name, because like it's obviously New World Sports Complex, but if you look at it, it's like the New World Championship.
Yeah, I don't think I ever...
So Paul's now won the World Championship and the New World Championship.
Yeah, I don't think I really thought about that until obviously I saw a bunch of people on social media talking about it and saying how this is a terrible name, because yeah. New World kind of being in my backyard of where I kind of grew up a little bit, it was a course that a lot of people talked about to me, saying like, when are you going to get out here? When are you going to play New World? So like I had heard of New World forever. Should they have called it the New World Championships? I think that's where it should have been, like, if you want. Well, here's the other interesting thing too, is when I think we start shifting to more of a sponsor based, right? More of the Dynamic Disc Open, more of the MVP Open. I'm trying to think of some other ones that the name is more the sponsor. We don't really have too many. I mean, obviously, most of them.
Discraft is pretty tied to the Great Lakes Open, or Ledgestone. That's like Ledgestone,
honestly, might be the best one, because it's like outside of like the actual disc golf manufacturers.
Yeah.
But I think that will be a huge step in like the actual naming of these tournaments, instead of naming them after the courses, which is what you have to do right now. Like New World did not have this tournament did not have a big sponsor tied to it. Yeah. So you have to kind of go with that. But yeah, they probably should have picked like the New World
Open
Challenge
or something.
Tournament. I don't know, something. But yes, I could see the confusion when you start talking about it, especially when you like just read it on like whatever, blah, 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 New World Championship. You're like, oh, wait, this is the New World Champion? So I can see how that can get slightly confusing.
Yeah, for sure. So do you want to, I mean, obviously last week you talked about how like you're kind of on the fence with all the weather and stuff. You obviously ended up flying in, playing the event blind, if I'm not mistaken. You want to just run us through kind of how your tournament experience went out there?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those where I think, you know, my mom lives out in Jacksonville, right? She lives kind of where we grew up. And the initial plan was for me and Kelsey to drive with all the dogs out there and make it like a fun week on the beach. Obviously the weather decided otherwise, and so we were basically I was contemplating on whether or not I even should go out there, because I didn't even know if the tournament was going to even happen on Friday. And at that point it's like, well, I don't want to fly out there on Friday and then the cancel on Friday, and I didn't want to deal with all that. So once the storm looked like it was going to kind of start moving a little bit more west and miss Jacksonville a little bit more than it had previously been predicted, I was like, all right, well, Friday's weather looks actually decent. It's only going to rain. And then Saturday, Sunday looks fine. So I was like, all right, I can, you know, fly in on Thursday and then, you know, just play, hang out with my mom, spend some time there, and then fly back. So it was one of those where I think like it was two real deciding factors on why I actually ended up going. One was obviously because my mom was there and she had yet to see me actually play in a professional disc golf tournament. So I know that was really important to her to be able to come and watch. And then the second one being just how weak the field was. And yeah, how just it was essentially just free points for just showing up. So, and it was one too, if you looked at the schedule, and we kind of went through the schedule a little bit, we might be able to go through it some more on the show today, but it was one of where like, if I can bank an early silver event, then that really allows me to have a little bit more freedom going into next season about being able to maybe strategically miss one that kind of gives me a little bit of a buffer, or that, you know, that precious week off going into an elite series event, or elite event, and, or even a major event. So that was, those are the key main factors on why even go, why I even decided to go. But I'm glad, I mean, ultimately I'm kind of glad I did, obviously, because I didn't play well, obviously, but I still was able to get some points. And it's gonna, like, it's when you think about it, there might be one or two other silver events that are pretty weak fields, but I don't think we'll ever find a tournament that has as weak of a field as this one did.
Yes.
Cause I was saying, obviously my first round was really, really bad. And I was in like 15th or 16th place, and it's like, you kind of have a good gauge on like how well you played the course. And, I remember I was playing with, I can't remember exactly who all I was playing with the first round, but I don't think any of the guys were touring pros. I think a lot of them probably were just local guys. And I was telling my caddy at the time, I think I was like on hole 12 or 13 or something. And I was like, I was like one under par or something. And I made a comment about like, yeah, I need to be like 6, 7, or 8 under at this point in the round. And he kind of was like laughing, kind of like, and I think some of the other guys on the card maybe overheard that and were like kind of shocked, I guess, with that idea. But I feel like you have a good sense when you play enough of these tournaments and you play enough with these good players, you have a good sense of like what is possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not surprised that, you know, Paul ended up shooting what he did out there. I honestly don't know. He probably coasted a little bit because of how big of a lead he had. But, like, I don't know if that score would have ended up winning had it been a full field.
Yeah.
Because I thought double digits was very attainable on a course like that. I don't know if you watched coverage and got a sense of the course. But there was a lot of par fours and a lot of par fives on that course of where if you threw a good tee shot, you should make birdie. So there was just a lot of birdies to be had out there. And it was one of those where I was like, gosh, after my first round being in like 16th place or something, I was like, I should be in like 80th is what it felt like if it was at a normal silver event or elite event. So I took advantage for what it was, you know. It was one of those where, you know, I took advantage of the opportunity to be able to snag a bunch of points.
Yeah, I'm surprised more people didn't do that. So, like, I pulled up StatMando. They have the event field strength rankings. It took me a little bit to get there. But this was the second worst field strength at a Silver Series all year, the worst being the other wraparound event in Lake Marshall.
So, oh, like, Lake Marshall is worse than this one?
According to StatMando, yeah, I don't exactly know how they figure the stat out, but
who were the top guys at Lake Marshall? I know Chris was there.
Lake Marshall, if I sort, Chris Dickerson, Joel Freeman, Evan Smith, Ezra Yulee, Matt Bell.
Okay, so it was basically it must have
the biggest thing was Paul being in the field.
I was gonna say Paul probably just brought and. Paul probably shot it up, and then Garrett Gerthy was there, which is probably closer to like Chris Dickerson ish. And then the Evan Smith, Ezra, like those guys were all at this one as New World. So Paul probably just shot it up.
So they have like a arbitrary points attributed to this. And so, for instance, the Open at Belton was the strongest Silver Series of the year with 54.86 points. Mm. Sula Open is the next closest to the New World at 18.7, but the New World had 15.6 and Lake Marshall had 14.5. So again, I don't know what those points really attain to, but just to give you a little bit of an idea, Jonesboro had 76.48 and the weakest Pro Tour event was the Portland Open at 55 points. So like just to give you a range of how weak the field really was. So basically all that to say, there's almost free points on the table. like if you're a consistent touring pro, you kind of to show up and play okay, and you're going to get – this was the best opportunity to get silver event points probably for the whole 2023 season.
Yeah, I had – well, I had one decent – I had one decent round. Round two was decent.
Yeah.
Round one was terrible, and round three was terrible. And I ended up at, what, sixth or seventh or something? So
you're tied for eighth.
Eighth. So
you're one stroke off seventh.
Yeah, so that's – I mean, it's essentially what I thought it was. Like, if I played well, I had a chance to win. And if I played terrible, I probably would still get, like, a top 15, top 20. Ended up getting a top 10. So there you have it. And
do you
and
think looking, it's, is it just timing as to why this field was so weak? Because like it's in Florida, it's not like I mean the weather was an issue, but the tournament like people were deciding to play this not play this tournament well before that weather. I think
if it would have been much closer to like if Lake Marshall and this tournament, New World, would have been much closer to the tour champion. Well, not even that. See, that's the thing. It's like a lot of people's seasons ended after MVP.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're just done. And they're up in the Northeast, done. To think that they're going to somehow, I don't know what they're going to do between now and Lake Marshall and now New World. Like, I think it's a lot of people ended up just going back home, right? Yeah. I would assume. And now to think like, I'll tell you an example of like someone, like one of the local guys to me here, that's also touring pros like Emerson Keith, right? Like I think his season was over after MVP. So I'm assuming he came back to Dallas because I've seen him play recently in some Dallas events here the last couple weeks. Like, is he now just going to drive from Dallas to Jacksonville to play one event and then drive back?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, I guess the only way you would really make it work is if you were going to do like a Florida swing. I guess they did have a couple other events because I saw people telling me like, hey, stick around for another week, come down south to play this, a B tier or whatever, A tier event. So I guess you could theoretically do that, like go to Florida for a month and do that. But if you're trying to have an off season, that doesn't make any sense. So I think the timing of it doesn't really make too much sense for a lot of people. And again, it's one of those where you have to remember most people on tour are traveling event to event by vehicle.
Yeah.
And so for me, whether it was in Jacksonville, Chicago, New York, Vegas, I mean, it really didn't really matter. It was going to be a 2.5 hour flight or whatever from Dallas. So if you're flying in, doesn't really matter. But if you're driving, I mean, me and Kelsey looked at that drive. We were going to do it. It was probably going to take us 16 hours from Dallas. So that's a tough pull to do. I think the weather hurt too. I don't know.
It didn't help. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I saw before I went out there, I was just kind of looking at who was going to be in the field. And a lot of that was like my decision on whether or not I thought, you know, it was a smart idea for me to go out there to get some points. And I mean, there was probably three or four people that dropped like the week of that probably would have beat me, honestly. So, and I don't know if that's weather-based, right? I don't know if they were doing the same thing as I was of where there was like, the weather feel looks terrible. Out. I'm just going to drop and not fly in the day before type of thing. So I don't know, but yeah, it's something that I think the Pro Tour's got to try to figure out because I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's the product they want.
Yeah, no, I think if they want these wraparound events, they got to build it out to where it makes sense. Like, they got to build it out to where, like, maybe there's a more extended period of time between the Tour Championship and when these start or something, or either more extended or narrower. But it wasn't really – it was very narrow because there was just one weekend between the Tour Championship and Lake Marshall and then a weekend between Lake Marshall and New World, I believe. So I don't know if that's necessarily the problem, but I think if you would have been like, you could have done like a off season tour almost of like this wraparound event and, you know, go to Lake Marshall. And then if they put one in like North or South Carolina, then the one in Florida, and then maybe one in Georgia or Alabama to where like, as you head south, like you have a month that like if you choose it, you can do it. So then if you are driving, it makes a little bit more sense, because like it seemed like a lot of the pros who were at New World are now are like living in Florida, or at least like I think Ezra's playing an off season in Florida. Last I had heard, to where like, yeah, why not play this? Like Paul lives in Jacksonville now, why not play New World? Like it's free points right down the street. Whereas if you're Ricky, yeah, you could fly, but Ricky's already set up in Arizona for the off season, and even Lake Marshall Open kind of got screwed a little bit by that big money skins match, because it pulled so many of the pros that might have considered staying, you know, another week front, because like that hurt Battle for Bedford was the week in between, and we had several pros who were like semi interested and were like, but I mean, there's $50,000 on the line if I go to Missouri. And so then you get players out to Missouri, and now you're like, do I really want to come all the way back to the East Coast where I just was for a silver event, when like I could just go ahead and head to Arizona or wherever I'm spending my off season? So yeah, I think they just have to make it a little bit more worth players' time. And I think that's probably their plan. It seems like they want to build out this wraparound event to where players can pick and choose. Because even if I'm Paul, what this just gave me is like, obviously silver events are going to drop and stuff, so but I got points. I got my silver event win. So I can choose an off week whenever I want for a silver event. The silver event with the strongest field, why play? You know, because I already have a win.
And the thing is, like, if he gets, you know, two more top fives, let's just say, at silver events, like, he pretty much has maximized the amount of points he can have at a silver event.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's a nice buffer to have, because, like we said, like, there was a handful of people that he had to beat.
Yeah.
You go to the first silver event of 2023 is going to be in Houston. Pretty sure it's going to be very similar to Belton. I'm pretty sure everyone's going to be there, because we're all on our way from Texas to Nashville. So why not stop in Houston to play the silver event? So, you know, I'm looking at these Blue Ridge Championship. That's right in between the Nashville one and Champions Cup. I feel like that's going to have a full field. And then you've got
Paul. That's the one I'm taking off, because that gives me another week to prep for a major.
Mm-hmm.
Then and it's going to be a strong field.
You have Beaver State Fling and the Cascade Challenge. That's smack dab right in between the two West Coast ones. Now, obviously, that might be a little bit of a weaker field, because you're going to have a lot of people that just don't do the West Coast swing next year. But I also think every year more and more people are going to be doing the West Coast swing. So it's going to be, those are going to be harder than they were last year. The Zootown Open, that one, I'm still like a question mark on like what the field like is going to be there. I think that one has potential of being not the greatest field. KC White Open, that one will be also.
I thought you just said KC White Open.
Oh, no. The KC White Open is the
KC, Kansas City.
Kansas City.
Oh, wide it's, open. It's, I really thought you said KC White.
It's a historic event. It was on the
It's been an A tier
like
for
that.
A long, long time too. It's been around for a while, but that's right before the European trip. So it'll be interesting to see if some people want to go out to Europe a little bit sooner. So that one might not be the biggest. Mid America is right after the European Open, so that one also might be a little bit weaker. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see kind of how it all plays out. But I know I'm very happy with my decision, even though obviously it was one of the most frustrating tournaments.
Yeah.
I'm still very happy about going out there. You want to go down the leaderboard just a little bit?
Sure.
I think the other thing too, when we're talking about like why are people going to tournaments and why aren't they going to these tournaments, the winner at this tournament, just to kind of give you a little bit of an idea, so the veterans, which used to also be a pretty big tournament back in the day. I think that was on the national tour, maybe. Veterans Open.
Veterans Park Open, VPO. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was at least very well attended if it wasn't on the NT.
Okay. So the winner this year of the VPO got $2,000. Paul just won $2,400.
Yeah.
So I think last cash here was 59, last cash at VPO 244. Now obviously that was because
was there a tie?
I think there was might have been a tie. There was a three-way tie at last, but second to last cash was 182.
Yeah, it was probably like 150, 160 for last or something like that.
So it's one of those where, again, like if you if you're one of those fringe guys, especially, like, you're definitely not going to New World.
And, not unless it's very convenient. Yeah. You're not spending a lot of travel expenses to get there.
No. So I think that's a big difference maker too, is if there's more money, then some of the bigger guys might make that trip to try to get that more money.
Yeah. Now, I thought one thing that was cool with the New World Championship was we ended with a Isaac Ezra Robinson tie for third. Two brothers made lead card. Both played okay. I'm sure Isaac and Ezra would have liked to have played a little bit better.
Yeah, I played with Isaac the final round. He didn't have the greatest final round.
Yeah, but a tie for third, you know, I'm sure, kind of like how you were saying, I'm sure there's a lot of players on this list that walked away upset with their performance, but happy with their finish as far as points go. Like, when mid-season comes around, like, Ezra's probably going to be happy he went ahead and got a sixth place silver event, when he might also be in the same boat of you, where he's like, man, I really... Like, he shot 8 under terrible. The final round. He's like, I could have easily shot way better.
Yeah. He played terrible the first two rounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Garrett had a good tournament. He got second.
Yeah.
Never really was challenging Paul. Paul kind of got off to a fire start, especially in that second round. Took Garrett by 4 shots in the second round. But Garrett finishing second, that's a solid finish for him. We just talked about the Robinson brothers. Sullivan Tipton, that's a name that maybe you're unfamiliar with and you maybe have heard for the first time. Solid player. Very solid player. I didn't get a chance to play with him, but I think he was in – I want to say it might have been the card in front of me, so I got to see a couple of his tee shots on the final day. But solid player, and also had a very good finish at D-Glow. So courses that are maybe more on the open side – and maybe a little bit forehand friendly, which this one was. I think you might see him if he does end up going on tour. He only played a handful of events. He did qualify for USDGC as well. So he played a handful of events on tour last year. We might be seeing his name a little bit more on tour next year. And I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of pops off. We talked about Ezra's tournament. Wasn't obviously what he wanted, but finishes well. And obviously that is, if you're going to have two bad rounds and one good round, you're always going to want that one good round to be the final round, because you then go home a little bit happier than you would have if that first good round was, you know, the first or second. Kevin Kiefer, that's another name that has popped up on some of the silver events. Another person that has had some decent finishes last year, I want to say. Let's see if I look through. Someone that I think, too, plays, got 22nd at Champions Cup. And let's see. 6th at Mid-America, 16th at D-Glow. Yeah, so he's had some decent finishes here and there. 9th at Lake Marshall. Another name that obviously has some of these silver events might pop off and kind of jump up the leaderboard a little bit. Jake Wolf, this is an interesting one. I believe this is a guy that only threw sidearm and tomahawks.
I feel like I've heard that name before. I don't know what he's done.
So he finished tied for 8th, playing a course only sidearm and tomahawks.
He tied you.
Yes. It's pretty impressive stuff, throwing sidearm and tomahawks.
Yeah, I don't know where I hear. I part of me feels like he played collegiate disc golf. I could be wrong.
There was someone told me that he used to be a pitcher or something, baseball player.
Huh? Maybe. Yeah, I don't see any collegiate disc golf things on him, so I don't know. Name just sounds familiar for some reason.
Martin Nies also finished 8th. He was on lead card the final round, and this, I believe, struggled. Was his first. Well, this was his first disc golf pro tour event too. So,
yeah, like I would have struggled. He struggled better than I would have struggled.
Yeah. So, hats off to him I'm sure he's super thrilled with his tournament. And then going down, Johnny McCray, I got to play with him second round. Awesome to see him back out. Obviously,
did he hit any turbo putts for you?
No, but we did play. we did play with a guy that only turbo putted, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah. So he was just turbo putting every putt. I thought he did it on the first hole as like a nice salute or something to Johnny McRae, because it was like a 5 or 10 foot putt. And then like the next hole, he had like a circle's edge putt, and was just like,
was he dirty with it?
He was, for how windy it was too. The fact that he was making them with it being that windy, I was like,
that should be a challenge Trevor and I do, turbo putts only.
Yeah. And what he said made sense. He said like he when he started playing disc golf, the person he was playing with turbo putted, and he was like, it was an easy motion just to be able to do consistently.
Yeah. If you can get good at it, it's a very repetitive, it takes a lot more of your arm out, because it's just like, and it's a more like natural, like if you, like for me, whenever I've turbo putted, I've can get semi consistent. I think it's just like, it makes sense because I played basketball, of like, that's how I aim, is my hands up here versus like bringing my arm down. I don't know. I don't think I would ever do it, just because I'd be scared to be made fun of, but I think I could be better at turbo putting than normal putting.
It was the same situation with Kelsey. Is she's way more consistent at making a 15-footer with a little scuba putt than she is at making like a normal one.
Some things just click. People's brains work different.
Yeah. You got Luke Sampson, who just won Lake Marshall, finishing off 12th this tournament. I'm sure that's probably not where he ideally wanted, because he did start really well. I think he was tied for the lead after the first round. So he kind of faded off there a little bit. Keep going down. Terry Roethlisberger, it was good to see him back on tour. I know.
Yeah, he hadn't played since Music City, I think we said, on Grip Locked.
Yeah, he just didn't tour towards the end of the season, or really towards like the second half of the season at all. So it'll be good to see him back out there. Connor O'Reilly, Randon Lada, who took down
Battle
for Bedford. And then you've got Andrew Fish, AJ Carey, a couple other kind of notables on here that finished a little bit down the leaderboard. But then the rest are kind of what we were talking about. You know, we kind of had, and this honestly too, this is where you guys were kind of, I don't know if we had already talked about that or I kind of pitched it to you, that we had the same kind of idea of where you were talking about, you know, ratings, right? And how, you know, this year at the end of the year, there's like no one over 1050. And last year there was 4 or 5 people consistently over 1050. What's going on? And, you know, again, hand up, be the first to tell you, I hate ratings. I think they're stupid. But I think we're also seeing why ratings were so inflated compared to what they are now, is when you have a field with more players, when you have a field on a course that is difficult if you throw bad shots. Like this course, and I was thinking about this too, this is why I think we need to get rid of courses that just are par three courses on tour, or courses that just have a lot of par threes. Because playing this course, like when I got to the final day, let's say.
Yeah.
The final day, for the most part, I knew exactly what tee shots, after playing the course twice, the final day, I knew what tee shots I needed to throw on the holes. My problem, and this was only the problem on par fours and par fives, was when I didn't execute the tee shot and I threw a bad shot, I was now in a position that I had yet to practice or really have an idea of what the next shot should be. And that caused me some problems. Par threes, you don't get that. You throw a bad tee shot on a par three, you're just laying up for a par.
Yeah.
You know, you're jump putting or whatever to a par. The par fours and par fives, you throw a bad tee shot, now you're in a position of like, okay, well, do I go for the birdie still, even though I'm kind of out of position? Or do I just lay up to where my tee shot, a good tee shot, should land? Or should I throw something in between being like you have decisions. And I think that's where you see the big score separators between a non-touring pro and a touring pro. Is the touring pro is probably going to make the right decision. The non-touring pro is either going to make the wrong decision or not execute in that that spot. So this is, you know, this tournament, I think, was a pure example of like what happens when you look at rate. Cause like the first round I played absolutely terrible. In the third round, I played absolutely terrible. But if you looked at the ratings for him, you'd be like, oh, you didn't play that bad. And yeah, that's the issue, is like, you have a bunch of people in the field that are making the course seem harder than the course actually is.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if you had a tournament playing at New World, same conditions, and you had only the top 50 players in the world play it, similar to like the Tour Championship or Maple Hill, where like the field is much more condensed and it's filled with pretty much just really good players. You know, you're going to see a ratings decrease. So that's my, I wanted to agree with you, what you guys were saying on Grip Locked, of where like, no, the players haven't gotten worse. It's not like Paul is a shot worse than he was 2 years ago. If anything, he's probably a little bit better than what he was a couple years ago. It's just, you're now having a lot of people in the field that just aren't making the course look as hard as it was in the past.
Yeah, that's like this field, realistically, you'd have to throw in one or two more top guys, but this field in a lot of ways would have been like a tour field from a few years back, where like you would have had a few top pros, you would have had like a few of the like grinders on tour that would be at most of the events they could make it to, but you have like West Coast pros back in the day aren't really driving to the East Coast that much, except for World. You had East Coast pros, unless they're the top players, not really going to the West Coast that much, because like you could make your living at eight tiers and stuff locally. And so what ended up happening is the bottom part of the field was just filled with local pros or local MA1 guys that want a chance to be put on, you know, someone cool's card round one. And so like you were saying, like this tournament, Paul averaged probably, I'd have to do the math in my head, but it should be close to like 1060. And like you were saying, like the second round is probably a little closer to what Paul probably would have like wanted to average or need to average to win on the pro tour.
Yeah. If it was a full tour. I don't know if he had an interview or anything after. I'm sure they talked to him after the second round. I'm sure he wasn't thinking like, because what 1070, if you go back, what does that stack up as far as his rounds this year?
Well, let me just look really quick at
obviously Champions Cup, when he shot that stupid round, that's probably gonna be his highest rated. But if you're looking
for instance,
kind of
Joel Freeman's 57, which the Pro Tour said was the most impressive round of the year, was 1077. And I'm sure Paul wouldn't put that in that category, but let's just look at Champions Cup, what Paul's
because his second under. His second round, what did he shoot? 10?
54.
So what is that, 10 under?
I'm not sure what the par is. Let me go tournament cut. Champions Cup.
It might have been 11.
And I think that Paul's 16 under at WR Jackson is one of the greatest rounds of all time. I think it's only eclipsed by like the 18 under at Toboggan. And the main reason was because that was 18 under.
Yeah, this is – I mean, I don't want to go too far down the ratings rabbit hole because we tend to do that.
Yeah.
But there's just not – it's not a good – it's really not a good indicator of how difficult, because you can play courses where – you can play courses where shooting – like you can shoot 16 under, let's say, at a lot of courses on tour. If you played out of your mind like Paul did, you can shoot 16 under a lot of courses. The difference though with WR Jackson is there are certain holes out there where you can't throw a bad shot off the tee and still make birdie. There are courses on tour where you can still throw a bad shot off the tee and still make birdie. So like in my opinion, that's less impressive because you only had to throw a handful of, you know, obviously a lot of good shots, but not as many as WR Jackson. Like WR Jackson, you cannot throw, I mean, almost every hole, if you throw a bad shot, you're just not making a birdie. So like the fact that he got 16, I think he did get one or two eagles. So there was a handful of pars he had, but like that just shows like how incredible of a round that is. So
yeah, the 16 under was rated 1090, 1092 to be exact. Essentially, the 54 at New World is equivalent to a 55, 13 under WR Jackson.
Yeah, no.
Not a chance. Not a chance on earth.
No, because I was close. My second round, there was, you know, I was semi-close to that. You know, a couple shots off. And There's no way. Like, if I would have shot 12 under at W.R. Jackson, I would be like, this is the greatest round of my life. And yeah, if I would have had a couple more putts go in for me my second round, I would not have left thinking this was the greatest round of my life. I made so many mistakes in that second round. So, yeah. It is what it is. It is what we thought.
That's all it needs to be said.
The last story I do want to say from New World, though, is Gavin Rathbun.
Yeah.
I don't know if the story's been out or people know what happened, but he ended up DNFing. He was on my card. If you go and watch, I guess H Run Productions was filming out there, so you can go and watch him play the first nine. I had talked to him going into the second round because he had like a big sleeve on his right arm, and I was like thinking, because I knew he had like, I want to say he had like shoulder surgery or something like that in the off season. And so I was like, I asked him about it. Like, is that something that has to do with that? Yeah. He's like, no, I got into a cat dog fight. So essentially I believe he has a cat and there was a dog that was loose that they ended up getting in a fight, and he went to try to break it up and, came away not that great, obviously, in that scenario. And so he was having some real, real issues the final round, to the point where, I mean, like, Gavin rips. He can throw. I mean, he's probably top. I mean, he's definitely one of the top guys on tour in distance, and he was not throwing very far, fast. You could see every single time he threw, he was in pain right after he threw. He was going through a lot of pain that round. So, after nine holes, he's like, I'm tapping out. I'm out. So I was surprised he even went that far. I thought maybe after four or five holes, he was going to be like, guys, this is enough. But he tried to power through as long as he could. You wonder too, like, did he do that because he was on coverage, right? Because there were cameras out there. Is that one of those where he was trying to just power through and not, not just kind of say deuces to the filming crew. I think he was, I don't know. It was one of those where I don't think if he was in a different scenario, I think he would have been like, after four holes, been like, I can't play.
Yeah. He said, I think it was in a post-round interview or something. I don't know exactly when it was. Cause like on coverage, they were initially worried that he was DNFing like with something coming back from his shoulder injury. But then obviously they got the word of like the cat dog fight thing. And in one of the post-round interviews, he basically said, I think it happened like right before his second round, if I'm not mistaken, right before one of the rounds. And he said like that round, he was just running on pure adrenaline still. So like he didn't really feel that much pain and stuff, but he like knew his arm was messed up. But in the third round, I think he said that he didn't want a DNF because he'd had to miss so much disc golf from his injury in the past that like, he just didn't want to like it just felt like, are you kidding me? Like, now I got to miss another tournament because of this. And so I think that was a big part of it, was he just wanted to just like, no, I can power through it and get through. And then was like, no, I can't, there's no way.
Yeah. I mean, playing that course when you know that you can throw the shots and just not being able to do it. That's definitely one of the more frustrating things that you can probably go through. So hopefully he heals up. I mean, I don't know to what extent of an injury it is. Like, if it is one of those where it's like a week from now, he'll be kind of back to normal and be good to go. I'm hoping it's not anything too serious, because obviously having him on tour next year is going to be better than not having him. So
yeah, the way he was talking, it didn't seem like something that was going to be really ongoing, the way he was talking about it. It seemed like something that he was like, yeah, it sucks, I'm gonna have to miss this, but I'm gonna be fine. Like, nothing really to worry about. So
all right, sweet. All right, that's all I have. If you have anything else with New World, that's all I have.
That's all I have with New World. I wanted to get into, just go over. I only have like talking points on one, but if you have talking points on any of them, we can bring them up. But the Pro Tour End of Season Awards, I believe all have been announced, but mainly the Rookie of the Year, Player of the Year, and Most Improved. I wanted to go over those really quickly. Talked about Rookie of the Year, I think, last week a little bit, but Isaac Robinson, MPO, Emily Beach, FPO, both make sense to me.
Isaac Robinson was probably one of the top guys on tour last year, so the fact that that was considered his rookie season makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Now, most improved, FPO, Valerie Mandahano makes perfect sense. She had a great season and went from 0 wins to 5th on tour with 3 wins. Now, Gannon Burr, I disagree with. I don't think Gannon Burr was the most improved.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing with most improved. Most improved for disc golf, how do we want to award that, right? Because most improved in other sports, you never see it go to a top person.
Yeah.
Right? Like if someone was like the ninth best, let's say the ninth best NBA player, and they end up becoming the second best NBA player. Like ninth best is so good that because they're the second, like that's not a huge jump. Like they're not, in the grand scheme of things, yes, that is a huge jump, but in the eyes of the viewers, like you're going to think of most improved as someone that was like a six man, like a bench guy, or like in football, someone that came off the bench or whatever. And then all of a sudden is just like putting up ridiculous numbers. Like, that's going to be most improved. So
like Simon.
Well, that's another interesting one, is can most improved go to also, and I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate here. Most improved go to someone that was really, really freaking good at one point, kind of fell off and then got to being really freaking good again.
But how good is like, really freaking good? He has Simon, 2 tour wins ever. One was in 2015, one was in 2018. And then he has four this year.
I'm throwing things out there. Like, let's say,
because Simon was most improved, and I don't think there's an argument.
Do you think Ricky could ever win most improved?
No.
Okay, because he's won too much already. Because what if he has three seasons? What if he has the next 3 seasons where he's missing cash? His best finishes are like 15th. Obviously, these are hypotheticals, but like, what if he just has 3 seasons in a row where he's just like an average guy, like one of those top 20 guys on tour. And then coming into his 4th season, he has a season like he did this year where he starts winning. Well, is he now most improved?
Yeah. No. But I think a key thing here is this is one of the first years we've have a deep field. So like if you're looking at average finish and stuff like that, the stat of average finish right now is so skewed because average finish this year versus last year, like they're hard to compare. Even if you go like for Ricky, if you were to go like 3 years ago to now, like Ricky's career arc, like if you look at the field 3 years ago, we were just talking about like New World and stuff. Like it's a different sport. It's a different game.
Yes.
So I think that's why right now you can go with like a Simon. You can't even make an argument for a Gannon who won it. You can make arguments for those players who are top guys just because like right now that improvement arc is there versus as the field gets deeper, then like someone who's like consistently in the top 20, that's way more impressive than like 2 years ago. If you're in the top 20, like it's not that impressive. And now you're in the top 10. That's a big jump versus like in the future, it's probably going to be someone who's like from like 60th, 50th, maybe like barely on tour.
Cause I was going to say like
now they're in the like top 20,
like a Chandler Kramer, Aaron Gossage, those type of guys. If those type of guys, it's just kind of one of those, I don't disagree because I know how difficult it is to be 40th to 35th, 35th to 30th. Like as you keep going down the ladder, it gets harder and harder and harder. I get that. But my question is like, do people, and the people listening, like this is where I really want to know, like, do you think someone that was a 70th player in the world last year, right? Never really heard their name. And now they're a top 20 guy. Do you think that person is more deserving of most improved or someone that was 10th in the world last year and is now third? That's kind of my,
the
70th
to 30th is, and Simon, I think that's where the award
Simon's
will
kind
go.
Of in the middle. Simon's kind of in the middle, right? But
yeah,
like I don't see, like to me though, like I agree that it seems, I guess it's just the wording of most improved because like I feel like Simon should have got an award, but I don't know if most improved was the right award. I think his award should have been like most surprising season or most.
I think most improved like, works for Simon though, because like it depends. I think the difference in how I view
I just feel
it
like he always had
like the value of a win. Simon was never a player that was in conversation for wins. If he was, it was because people were fanboys.
I just don't know if his skill level, like, I think he just improved. I think he improved on his decision making.
That's all skill.
And his gameplay. But to me, it's like he always was a top player.
He always had top talent, but he was never able to, like, put it into practice until this year. And that's in golf. Golf's just as much a mental sport as a physical sport. So you can have all the physical talent in the world, but if you're not there just, mentally, you're not going to be a top guy.
I guess it's just hard for me to give it. Like, it's harder for me to, like, to think about giving it to Simon. And the only reason is literally just because, like, he wasn't trash. It wasn't like he was a trash disc golfer and all of a sudden became a good disc golfer. And it wasn't like he was a good disc golfer and all of a sudden became a great disc golfer.
I can agree with that statement.
Like, I just feel like he was a really great disc golfer. The only difference is he just found ways of winning this year where, like, it's more – this is what I think. I think it's more –
we just have to apply that logic to Gannon, too.
I know.
Because Gannon was rookie of the year last year.
I think this is the easiest way of saying it. I think I'm more surprised by how little wins he had in the past than surprised that he won four times this year.
That's a fair statement too. I'm just saying if we're using the logic to give Gannon player of the year, most improved, then we have to use that logic for everyone. If you use that logic for everyone, it goes to Simon.
Simon, yes. Yeah. I agree. If you use the same logic, it goes to Simon versus
Gannon. How can a
Gannon
rookie of the year win most improved next year? Like, rookie of the year is like you have the best season as a rookie that you can possibly have to win rookie of the year, and then it's like, most improved. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Especially when you have someone who goes from, like, never winning to four wins in the same season.
Yeah, I think that's my whole point is, like, it's just and maybe there wasn't someone that jumped out on the page this year. I mean, I just threw out Chandler Kramer and Gossage as, like, two guys that I think, you know, people weren't really talking about last year. Obviously, Gossage did have a couple good finishes at, like, OTB and there's one other event that he kind of popped off last year, but they still just weren't guys that people were, like, consistently talking about, to where now they are a little bit more household names. I think you do that when you put your name, you know, you put your name in the basket of majors and competing at majors. And maybe that's what it was. Maybe there wasn't a player.
I mean, Corey Ellis probably could have been, like, in the conversation.
Yes. Corey Ellis is a good one. Here's a question. If Matty O wins three times next year, is he the most improved player?
By the current standards?
By the current standards, he would probably get it.
The tough part is Matty O this year. It's not like Matty O had the season Simon had last year. This year, Matty O was constantly in the top five, top three. Like, he was up there nonstop. It would be like if Calvin won six times.
Nicholas Antilla.
Now, that'd be more of a Simon type thing.
That could have been a... No, I'm saying...
Or are you saying this year? I'm saying this year. Yeah,
Corey Ellis jumps out at me.
Corey Ellis, he probably got snubbed there.
Alden Harris also is another person that kind of jumps out at me.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying.
It's just it's tough to think about most improved as, like, someone that
was already good and then just got a little better.
Because, like, did Simon really have that terrible of a season last year?
Well, it depends on what you determine as terrible. No. Well, like, season-wise, no. He didn't have a terrible season, but he went from 0 wins to 4 wins.
No, and I Gannon know that.
Gannon had a decent season last year, too, and went from a decent season to a better season with 1 win at a major. So, like, they both had decent seasons last year, improved their seasons this year. Difference is Simon had 4 wins. Which outweighs, in my opinion, the slightly better average finish that Gannon had. Because, again, if we're using the logic to make
Simon
Gannon
also didn't even tour. Simon didn't even tour that much last year.
He was injured, so you almost have to go back 2 years. If you go back two years, it really is in his favor.
So that's the other. That's the other thing. It's like, okay, yeah, I don't know if I'm giving it to Simon.
I think
he deserves. I think he deserves a war.
He deserves most improved player.
This is my perfect example. Can you be most, like, is he just most improved because he was injured last year? Like, what the heck? Obviously most improved.
No, you got to use context.
I just felt like Simon was always one of the top guys. Ben Simmons. Am I wrong? Am I wrong in thinking that he wasn't?
People have name recognition of Simon because of YouTube and because he would get on coverage and do crazy things. The dude didn't win, period. Like Simon has a overinflated essence of how good he was before this year because of how popular he was and how good he was at branding himself. He was one of the biggest names in the sport without being one of the best players in the sport. Now, by that I mean he's not like a top like 3-5. Yeah.
Can I jump in here real quick? 2020, sure. Again, he didn't tour that much, so I don't know what happened. Maybe he's still injured in 2020. He got 5th at Las Vegas, 7th at Memorial, 10th at DDO, 2nd at Preserve. Then he won a bunch of like small tournaments.
We're going to skip the 37th, 42nd, 69th, 26th.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going top finishes.
Okay. Eighth
at Maple Hill and 2nd at the Silver Series main event. But like he still didn't even that's not a full touring thing. Like what was going on? Why is he not doing full tours?
Okay. I don't know. 2020, did anyone do a full tour? It was COVID.
Oh, that. Okay. Yeah. Dumb. 2019. Okay. This is more of a full tour for him. So he got 7th at Vegas, 2nd at Memorial, 10th at Waco, 7th at Jonesboro, 58th at DDO or Glassblown, 2nd at Masters Cup, 3rd at Portland, 5th at Beaver State, 8th at Ledgestone, 2nd at President's Cup, 9th at European Open.
President's Cup doesn't count for anything.
8th at Worlds, 3rd at MVP, 5th at Smugglers.
53rd at USDGC. Well, I mean, sure, then we got to look into Gannon.
But, I mean, you look at his season this year, it was the same thing. Like, he just basically, instead of his second, third, fourth, and fifth.
That's the trump card. 4 wins.
He had one of them. I'm not disagreeing. He had one of the more impressive seasons. Like, legitimately,
one of the most.
I don't know. How do you want to measure it?
Well, I agree.
Want to give it to the guy? Yes.
We want to give it to the. It's just because we gave it to Gannon, is my whole thing.
I know.
If we're giving it to Gannon, we got to give it to Simon. But we shouldn't give it to either of them. We should give it to the person who came like a Corey Ellis or something like that. I fully agree with that.
Can we also we agree on this, right? Someone that cashes at every event goes from cashing at every event, having some top fives, top tens, to then going the next year doing the same thing. But now instead of those top fives, top tens, he gets 4 wins. That is a way bigger jump in improvement, right? Than someone that went from never cashing to cashing at every event.
Way smaller jump, you mean?
No, it's a bigger jump. That's harder to do.
Yeah.
The jump that requires to do that is harder to do than going from not cashing at all to cashing.
Yes.
But
I don't know what point you're making.
No. My point is, but like, so we both agree, like what Simon did this year was harder to do than someone that was just not doing anything to like starting to cash. But again, it's just when you think about most improved player, and again, you think about other sports, it'd be tough to give like a top 10 quarterback in the NFL most improved player because he won the Super Bowl.
Well, as long as they were solid the year before. Yeah.
Like if he was a consistent top 10 quarterback his entire career.
Yeah. No, he would not get most improved.
And then he
ever.
Won the Super Bowl. It'd be hard for you. If you said like, well, he most improved player this year, people would be like, what? Because there are so many people that just literally, I guess the eye test, it's just way easier to give most improved to like a Chandler Kramer, someone that no one had any idea who this person was. I don't even know if they toured last year, so maybe he should have won Rookie of the Year. Who knows? But like, it's just I think eyeball test. It's easier to see like this guy didn't cash at all, and now he's getting top 10 finishes.
Yeah,
like that jump, even though we both know skill-wise is easier to make that huge jump. And it's the same thing with ratings. If you're out there and you're playing and you start your rating at 910 and that's where your baseline is, you're going to be able to improve to 960, 970 really quickly. Like you're going to be able to get there in maybe a month or two, but then to get from 970 to 1,000, that might take you a year and you might never ever get there. So like as you go further up, it gets harder and harder, but okay, enough about that. Next award.
Player of the year, I don't think there's any qualms. I think that what's funny about player of the year is the pro tour is going to get it right and the PDGA is probably going to get it wrong. But yeah, Ricky and Kristen, clear player of the year. I don't think there shouldn't be any arguments against that from anyone. But all right, I think it's time to wrap out the show with some questions that you had from Twitter, I believe.
Oh, yes. I did want to real quickly go over the Nico sponsorship real quickly for those living under a rock. Nico, first one to make a big sponsorship splash. I think we all were kind of expecting something. I think the only interesting point here for me with Lone Star is he might be the biggest exclusive Lone Star athlete sponsored player. I think
he is
right. Like the other big players that are sponsored by Lone Star basically have a mixed bag.
And they're not as big as Nico.
Correct. Well, I mean, Nico is still top. He might still be a top 10 guy.
Yeah. Name wise, he definitely is. But also I thought it was interesting. The contract gives him this, like, I think it's called Sacred Discs, but it's his own line of like separate discs.
Did
I don't know if
that's
something
prior.
I had never heard of it prior.
I never either.
But that doesn't mean it didn't exist. Like I had heard of Flight Club, his brand.
Yes.
That's the Lone Star.
Yep.
But yeah, Sacred. I don't know exactly what that was. It might have been something in development before that, like just no company ever really put into fruition, and now Lone Star saying we'll do it. But it seems like a pretty good partnership, all in all. I was expecting him just to sign with Gateway. I think that was kind of the obvious one people were expecting. But Lone Star was on my radar mainly because he had like DM'd one of a shop or something saying like, hey, I've got a pretty good relationship with Lone Star. You know, are you interested in carrying any of their products? Like almost like a salesman type pitch. And that got screenshotted and sent to me. And when someone sent me that, I was like, you know, that could be like a sneaky play. You know, in a lot of ways, Lone Star Plastic, like some of their plastic feels kind of like Gateway, but I don't mean that in a bad way, especially their like putter blend stuff. So I think he can do well with it. I do think big players going to boutique brands or whatever you want to call the like smaller niche brands can be a little bit of like a disadvantage just because you might have a full lineup, but you don't have a fully full lineup to where like Distance Driver, Overstable.
That might be like a good thing though. That might be a good thing. Sometimes like minimizing, you got to make it work.
But the only downside is like you throw the nuke if you went to a different company, right? And like they only had one driver slot and that one driver slot was like a disc was just slightly uncomfortable in your hand. You're like, man, I really wish it was a little faster. Then like you don't have an option to like you can try out at Discraft the Force, the Surge, the Zeus, the Nuke, and find what fits you because they can all accomplish very similar things. Whereas at Lone Star, it's like you got the Warbird. Hope you like it. So
yeah, true. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer on honestly both sides, right? Like Nico's in a position. Nico's not in the most aggressive position that he can advantageous, I guess, position that he can be in right now, where he can't really come to companies making demands at this point in time, because he is a little bit more of like a a wild card as far as whether or not it's going to work out. And Lone Star, they probably are in a position where it's like, why not? So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Yeah. I know, obviously, I've always had a good relationship with Nico. He was one of the guys that I reached out to when I first was coming on tour and would, ask questions and stuff in the DM. So I've always had a good relationship with him. Now, obviously, he has done some stuff that I don't agree with, but, I think people can change. And I think, I've done stuff in my past that I'm not proud of either. But it's one of those where, you know, what is it? What they say, proof is in the pudding, right? Like,
yeah.
If he's changed and he's making a valiant effort to be better on the course than he has in the past, we'll see that. And if he hasn't, yeah, we'll see that as well. So,
yeah, I think that's risk.
See how it plays out.
Yeah, that's like the risk, if you want to call it that. That Lone Star is taking is like they could be a part of this like positive character arc of Nico and ride this momentum that he's going to have coming into the, because he's going to be, all eyes are going to be on him at Vegas in the beginning of the tour. And so Lone Star's attaching their name to that, and it's either going to be this great positive story of like, wow, look how much Nico's changed, look at what he's doing out there, you know, and they can ride that momentum. Or if he comes out and a few events in, it's like, man, Nico hasn't changed, then yeah, they're going to get some negative PR, but they could also be just playing the thing of all PR is good PR. Something else.
We'll see how that plays out. Yeah. Last big story too, before we bounce into some questions here, Seppo just made an announcement on his Instagram that he is retiring from competitive disc golf. And I read through it, and the gist that I got from it is kind of, you know, what have been talking about this podcast a lot, of just how like the tour has changed. The tour is not what the tour used to be.
Well, what's crazy is for someone like Seppo, he was like, he would come over, compete very well in like the 2015, 2016, 2017 era like that. He had a lot of name recognition during that time period, where like him, KJ Naibo, like these were the European MPO players that everyone knew. And he grew a big fan base, but COVID happens, right? To where the Europeans can't get over here for a much more extended period of time, but disc golf continued in the US. So the Pro Tour and stuff continued. All this new influx of players, to where it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of people listening to this podcast, unfortunately, are like, why is Seppo retiring a storyline? Who is Seppo? And it's like, man, Seppo is one that, like, when I look at it and like I was thinking through when like he made the announcement and stuff, I was like, man, he was a player that, like, to me, he was one of the big players. But like with COVID, like, I don't know if he's been back over to the U.S. since COVID. And if he has, it's maybe been once or twice. He hasn't been like consistently on tour in the U.S. and he hasn't been on tour on coverage like he used to be back in the day. And it's like, man, COVID obviously helped the sport in a lot of ways, but it really screwed some of the European players from like, they've now, disc golf in Finland and stuff is massive in Finland. And so he still has, like, he was still having great success in Finland and stuff like that. And he is very big partners in Prodigy Europe, to where he's still involved in disc golf in a lot of ways. But it's like, there's so many players that just got removed from the field. Disc golf exploded. And then when you try to insert yourself back in, he's playing a different sport when he comes back in. Like, it's not even the same game that he left, realistically, because it's like, you know, the Pro Tour is taken way more seriously. There's like semi-security at events. The fans are bigger. Events are bigger. And then the field is way deeper to like come back. It's probably like a culture shock almost to like leave when the Pro Tour is just starting up and then come back. And you're like, man, what is this?
I think it's more on the side, and we've seen this from other people too, of where, you know, they haven't necessarily come out and done the same thing that Seppo did, where he's like, I'm retiring. But we have seen some names that you probably are way more familiar with than some of the newer players into disc golf, of they're just not touring anymore. And they're just not going because financially it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And a lot of this has to do, you know, we'll just keep kind of the theme of like New World, right? Like, I went into New World probably the most unprepared of any tournament I've played this season. And also just unpracticed, as far as like, we had a wedding in Mexico the week before, and coming, I just was, my game was just not feeling good. Like, I was basically just showing up, and it's like, whatever I have, I wasn't really practicing that much. And I was still able to make $600, right? If I do that same exact thing on tour next year, I'm making $0 at pretty much every event. Like, I'm not cashing. I can't show up to these tournaments without practice, without putting in the time putting, without going to the field throwing. You can't do that. You just cannot do that. Unless you're one of the super crazy top guys, sure, maybe you can get by with having some off weeks of where you're just not practicing, you show up. I doubt that anyone's doing that anymore. But that, I think, is more of the shock of where, oh, wait, I can't just like show up and be one of the best players. Like, there are so many people that are hungry and wanting to get that spot from you that you have to be constantly practicing. You have to be constantly putting in a lot of work. And if you're not doing that, we have seen you will get passed.
Yeah.
And do I think Seppo could be a top player? 100%. I've watched him. I've seen him up close and personal. The dude's got insane skills. I think he made a decision of where, you know, obviously the travel, I'm sure, from Europe to the United States is probably not the easiest and not the most fun. And like you said, he has other things going on. I'm probably going to be in the same boat as he is at some point of where I'm going to make a decision of like, do I want to continue the grind that it is of touring, practicing, doing all that? At some point, it's just, I'm going to have to call it quits and switch over my time and efforts into foundation completely. And I think that's what I think it is more. It's like, it's if you're as competitive as he is, and from the gist of the little time I've spent with him, he is an extremely competitive person. It is not fun to show up to a tournament and not feel like you've put in the work that you need to compete. It's just not a fun thing. And putting in that work, if that's just something that just doesn't make sense to do in the life that you're currently in, you're in this kind of weird flux of like, well, what should I do?
Yeah.
You can't be half in, half out on the tour anymore. And especially you're not going to be able to do that in a couple years, even more so.
For sure.
So.
For sure.
All right. But I wish him all the best. And unfortunately, it's a bummer that I never really got to play with him. I don't think I've been able to watch him in person. I've never got to actually play with him. But he was one of those guys. He was one of the first disc golf videos I ever shared. Way back in the day. I think he made that ace off of, was it the pier? Was that him off the pier or something? There was a video, I think it was him, of where he made and I shared it. It was a crazy video. But regardless, Seppo, who knows? Maybe he'll pop on a couple tournaments. That would also make majors a little bit more cool too, right? If like you don't get to see Seppo play at all, but you get to see him at Champions Cup or
– yeah.
Would it, you know, something like that. We were talking about like
maybe how it's like a fighter thing where you just like everyone starts going into retirement and then coming out of retirement, then going back into retirement, then coming out just for the hype factor.
That is true. If he came out of retirement next year, people would go
lose
nuts.
Their mind.
All right. I asked you guys some questions on Twitter. These were the best ones. We've got Connor, we got CRS, the con man. How much do sponsors influence what disc pros throw? I would say, I mean, considering myself, zero. The last 3 years, Discraft has not been like, hey, we really need you to be pushing this disc or this disc.
Do you think that's something that could happen in the future?
No, I don't think so. I think it's more what happens now is more pros feel like they need to be throwing the disc that they make money off of more. Because why not, right? Like why would I be throwing a disc that if I help sell that disc, I don't make any money off of it? So I think you sometimes see certain pros throwing shots, you know, like something that I'm going to be working on this offseason is like my straight game, like being able to throw straight at the basket, because I think that is one, a very good shot to have in your arsenal, but also there's just times where you can't swing it out wide. So like a get freaky zone, I can't swing out 30, 40 feet right of the basket and have it come in all the time. I need to be able to throw that Challenger OS or that Roach or whatever it may be. I need to be able to throw that straight shot. And I could see how like, well, I don't get paid if I sell a Roach or a Challenger OS or whatever, right? I get paid if I sell a get freaky. I could see how that could influence my decision-making. And I think we have definitely seen it, especially on coverage. People are going to want to throw the disc they make money off of. So
yeah,
I don't think pros are getting stuff from Innova or Dynamic or whatever, being like, hey, you need to put this in your bag and throw this.
Yeah.
Steve Geis, 63, not a question, but a topic. Elite series majors should, or elite events majors should be four rounds. Cuts after two could be three. Days one and two are predetermined groupings. Alternate morning, afternoon tee times. Then by score for rounds three and four. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's where the Pro Tour is headed, and I think the Pro Tour is just doing what they know to do best, which is just take it slow so that we don't culture shock anyone. Because like if you look at majors, have kind of headed that direction, not the full flip-flop pool A, pool B. I wouldn't really be pool A, pool B because it'd be the same course, but not the flip-flop tee times, but the four rounds cut. And now we see that added to the Elite Plus events. I mean, I think that we'd be kind of dumb to think that that's not eventually just going to be added to the Elite Series events. And then, like, as that happens, I'm sure there'll be more and more situations with weather, and as live coverage gets better, it's like, hey, yeah, now let's go ahead. It makes sense to do this flip-flop thing so that everyone has the fairest shot possible at, scoring conditions and stuff. I think it's also kind of a no-brainer helps. Progression.
I think that also builds the event out, too. So the way I would have it set up is, and we're just talking MPO here, I think there are getting to be enough top pros, right?
Yeah.
To where you can make multiple feature cards that people would be interested in watching. So you have two or three feature cards in the morning, two or three feature cards in the afternoon. One,
yeah,
that's awesome for the people on the grounds, because if they want to be that, if they want to watch as much disc golf as possible, they can follow a morning group and have feature cards in the morning, and then they can follow the afternoon feature cards. And now you have more feature cards to where, crowds are going to be spread out a little bit because some people aren't going to do both, right? And then when you do flip-flop, you have the feature cards that you're filming play in the morning, and then you feature cards that are in the morning. Now you're filming the second day. So I think that is probably the best way, because obviously the filming, like that's, they have those time slots that they have to film because they're filming FPO as well.
I think that
makes the most sense. And from a spectator standpoint, now you're giving me an option to where I can go out in the morning and watch a group of four people that I really love as well.
For sure.
These first two rounds. AJ Hooper, 94. Will we ever see a competition between the teams of each disc manufacturer? I'll just let you say yes or no, because we talk about this maybe once a month. People really want to see it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say never, but I don't think it's a priority of anyone.
Okay. Richard Dugan. Will disc golf purses one day rival golf tournament purses?
Like current golf tournament purses, probably, but at that point, golf's probably paying out $1 billion.
Oh, you think disc golf will get to the current one? I don't think it will ever get to the current one.
Well, I mean, if you give disc golf enough time and inflation keeps happening, yeah.
Oh well, okay, yeah. I was just saying, like, the world's kind of tapped out on like human population, almost, right? Like, we can't get like another 10 billion people on the planet, can we? Mm-mm. Like we're kind of tapped out on like the amount of people. So like my thought is like, yeah, we can kind of increase how many people play disc golf and stuff, but like disc golf will never, like the same
disc
thing
golf
as, like,
and golf won't have the same disc golf and golf won't have the same purses at the same time.
Yeah, pickleball will never, and I could be wrong, and I will tweet out I am wrong if this ever happens. Pickleball will never outpass tennis.
No, but pickleball is a subset
of pickleball.
Yeah, it's a very investable sport. At least
I don't think pickleball is going to be around in a couple of years. As what it is now, like the hype, I think
there's definitely
a
hype train that'll go down.
Mainly wasn't because spike ball like people, that at one point,
not nearly the pickleball level. No.
Okay.
Pickleball, I think what will end up happening is there's like an arc again where like you're going to get a bunch of new people into pickleball. People start watching pickleball, right? Because like, there's all their favorite pros, Tom Brady, LeBron James, or talking about it. You start to watch it. If you love it, you're probably going to like tennis because it's the same sport, more or less. Pickleball's a little faster paced and stuff, right? So if you like watching pickleball, you're probably going to like watching tennis. And if you start watching tennis, watching people play for probably three times as much money is just going to be more interesting. So, like,
well, I think
people's
also,
interest will go down, but also people's interest will go elsewhere.
Well, I think it's also just a more, it's the same concept as why, like, tennis is a bigger sport internationally than table tennis is.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I actually could be wrong.
I was going to say, I don't know if you meant to flip that.
Well, no, table tennis is massive in Asia, but.
Do you mean bigger by like maybe this is the American play?
This might be the American bias. Maybe tennis is just big over in America, but like if you look at the world, but like I don't know because I feel like I would know that.
Well, what do you mean by bigger? What do you mean by bigger? Let's start there.
Like soccer is bigger internationally, like in the world, soccer is a bigger sport than the NFL.
Yes.
But if you – and, like, even though we have the bias that, like, soccer is not that big in America, we still know soccer is bigger in the world than it is football.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, table tennis, if you go –
I feel like I would know that, though, for table tennis, right? Like, I would hear that same thing.
Table tennis is not bigger than tennis, but table tennis is massive. But also you have to think, like, are you talking amount of players or people – are you talking about amount of players
or just, like, fans? No, it's more just, like – yeah, it's more just like the people watching. Because I think the thing with pickleball is you can play it for a longer time in your life. Like,
yes,
I went and saw like a women's league of where there it's just way easier for people later in their lives to play pickleball because it's way less athletic of a game than tennis is.
It's a slower game, smaller court.
Yes. And so like it makes sense, especially for the people that love tennis and are like, man, my knees, I just can't run around like I used to. I can't run and stop. I can't do all that. You can play pickleball. So like I don't see that going away as, I mean, heck, we used to play essentially what pickleball was. We used to do that in tennis all the time. Like that was just, you know, you would just play in the service box. And that's essentially what a pickleball court is.
Yeah.
My point is like pickleball is a subset of tennis.
Yes.
I just don't ever think it'll pass tennis because again, when I watch someone play pickleball, regardless of how good they are, and I watch someone play tennis, like if you have the best pickleball player in the world and the best tennis player in the world, when I watch those two, I'm going to be more impressed with the tennis player because it's a much more difficult sport. And I think that's the same thing with disc golf and golf. Is golf is a much more difficult sport than disc golf.
Yes.
So watching the best disc golfer versus the best golfer, even though they're the best in the field, you're still going to look at the golfer being like, holy cow, they're doing something that's more impressive because it's a more difficult feat.
The only difference, I fully agree, disc golf will never pass or equal golf's purse size and stuff at the same time. Like, again, I think disc golf's purses will grow, but as disc golf's purses grow, golf's purses will be growing. So it's not like we're not going to catch them. But the only difference I think between pickleball, table tennis, tennis, like it's literally like you're using almost the exact same equipment. Like it is the exact same thing. Like pickleball, correct, you're even on the same. Golf and disc golf, where they are the same subset as a sense of rules and stuff, they are completely different sports. To where, like, one, you have a completely, like, both of them have completely different throwing motions, completely different things that make them hard and stuff. To where, like,
foot golf, do you think that is correct? But when you look at foot golf, you probably have a different opinion on foot golf than you do on disc golf.
Well, foot golf, I think, smaller now, but it could just as easily as disc golf could take off, foot golf could take off.
Really?
What I'm saying is, fans of disc golf aren't fans of golf. Fans of foot golf aren't fans of golf. Fans of foot golf are probably closer to fans of soccer.
Soccer.
Whereas fans of pickleball are probably fans of tennis because you're watching like the exact same. Both are using rackets. Both are very similar motions. Both are very similar strategies. Disc golf and golf are different enough.
A little bit more separate. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're not going to reach. It's a subset, but not in the same. Yeah, not in the same thing.
Yeah, you're right. So yeah, and what you just, I mean, that brings up a good point. So I guess what you're saying is there's a better chance that disc golf gets closer to golf than pickleball gets closer to tennis in that regard, because
correct,
you're not pulling from the fit. Yeah,
it would almost be if pickleball was using, it would almost be like tennis and volleyball. It's kind of like disc golf and golf.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I can see that.
Yeah.
And someone brings up a good point here in a little bit, which we'll bring up. Someone was talking about, AJ Hooper messaged me talking about how, like, I guess Hannah has come out and said that she wants, like, well, I'll just say, she said at that World's European Open USDC, she wasn't allowed to walk with Paul, so she would have to walk with the spectators, but that's hard to walk with spectators because they have complete access to her while she is trying to focus on watching Paul. She wants to see improvements on special area for family of players, or more consistent rules about who is inside the ropes. It'd be interesting to hear your thoughts or Kelsey's thoughts on this. So I talked to Kelsey because she has gone to a handful of tournaments, and she's never mentioned once to me about, like, not liking to have to be in the crowd to watch. And I don't really want to get too much into what my opinions on what Hannah had to say. But I think this brings up a good point of, like, who should be allowed in the ropes.
Media and caddies.
Correct. And I will go on top of that and saying, like, to me, the definition of a caddy is someone that is carrying the bag.
Correct.
You can't just have the caddy badge and be walking.
It's not an emotional support caddy.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, like,
and I think media should be official media to go to that as well.
Yes, because I definitely have, obviously, I've definitely have used the caddy loosely, the way that everyone has been using it loosely at some tournaments, of where it's like, oh yeah, you just come inside the ropes, you can be my caddy, right? But I think that needs to be enforced. I think that needs to be enforced where it needs to be someone that is actually there to assist carrying your bag, pulling your cart, whatever it may be. And then outside of that, you're going to have media, which are like filming, media where it's like you guys or AltiWorld or whoever that's writing articles or doing social media stuff. Like, those people should be inside the ropes. And then, like, tournament staff people, right? Whether it's the spotters or tournament directors, officials, those type of people inside the ropes. Everyone else outside the ropes.
Well, I think media, as far as foundation goes and AltiWorld bloggers and stuff like that, personally, I think as it continues to develop, we should just be in the VIP section. Like, we don't need you. I don't think you really need to be in the ropes. Cause, like, inside the ropes and disc golf is like a different type of, like, access, because, like, there is no different levels to inside the ropes. So, like, if you're inside the ropes and you add everyone there with media badges, then, like,
yeah, but I think the VIP only makes sense, like, only makes sense at certain courses, right?
Well, but, like, they have VIP, like, VIP is just the gallery that follows the card.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to, I don't think that's
that
a good
will always
idea.
Exist.
Really?
I think so.
In on the course.
Yes. Following you're behind the card. Yes. And then the general admission will be continued to
interesting.
Build out.
Interesting. Okay. I never thought that would exist like as more and more people came.
Well, I think it's a very limited amount, and it might be something where that, instead of it being called VIP, ends up just being the, like, where the media, as there's more reporters and stuff, goes. Because, like, if you think of media passes, right?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're a media person, do you want to be next to a bunch of VIP people?
Do you want to be? No. Should you be? Yes. If I'm not, if I'm a cameraman, or, like, if I'm an official pro tour photographer and an official pro tour or Jomez type video person, I need to be inside the ropes. Everyone else does not need to be inside the ropes. Like, us there doing stories and getting stuff for Grip Lock, we don't need to be inside the ropes.
But you're saying you should be able to still pay to get inside the ropes.
No, VIPs aren't inside the ropes in that sense. There's, like, a barrier, like, how disc golf audiences follow currently.
How do they change? So I'm saying, how do they change? If you're saying there's a barrier,
yeah,
right? And basically it's just like a walking line is what you're saying.
Yes.
Correct. I just don't see, I could be wrong. I just don't see that happening down the road when you have like, if you have 5,000 people showing up to an event, I don't know.
VIP,
that's an interesting one.
I think VIP eventually will be like, it's not a paid spot. It's like if celebrities showed up to a tournament.
Correct.
That's
those people should. Those people will be inside the ropes, but they'll be. I'm saying inside the ropes, you should always be on the side. Here's my thought process. If I'm filming, right? If I'm filming the caddy and the player,
yeah,
right, and I'm zooming in or whatever, like, do I want to have in the middle of the fairway, do I want to have like 50 people behind them?
No,
probably not. Also, the other thing too is like, do you want to have all that foot traffic? You got to think too down the road. Like, imagine if it was like rainy or whatever. Like, do you want to have that? I don't know. That's kind of a stupid argument. I don't know if people really care to hear about that. But I think moving forward, I think we can all agree, like, the people inside the ropes, as far as like not VIP and all that stuff, just the people that have access to like actually be right by the players, should pretty much just be the media, officials, players, caddies. And then yes.
There's in disc golf currently, there is way too many people inside the ropes at an average tournament.
If you're a wife, if you're a husband, if you're a girlfriend, if you're a boyfriend, if you're a family member, you are amongst the people watching.
You're welcome to be a caddy and carry the bag. But other than that,
amongst the people.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're a friend, a fellow competitor, same thing. Like that was always the biggest pet peeve of mine. Was like,
you can't just
you finish a tournament, you can't just walk back in and be like, oh, well, I'm a competitor, so I'm gonna just get inside the ropes. And like, you'd have like 10 players sometimes inside the ropes.
Do you like that rule? Do you like that rule? If you did not start as a caddy, if you don't have a caddy to start your round, you can't just pick up a caddy.
No,
on
I think
whole caddy seven?
Should have caddy badges, and that's it. That's what they're there for. Like, you are a caddy. Yeah. You can play FPO and caddy for MPO if your tee times allow, but like, you check on hole one's tee. That's the official people inside the ropes, and no one gets inside the ropes if you're not inside the ropes on a hole one.
We'll rip through the last couple here. Bramwell 428 wants to know, should there be more formats on tour, match play, skins, as actual disc golf pro tour events? I'm not opposed to having a actual match play event
that like counts towards pro tour points.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it.
I don't like it. I'm fine with it being exhibition and there being a lot of money and it being like a fun thing, but no. I don't like it.
I don't know. I think you could set it up in a way to where it still makes sense. I mean, heck, if we're giving points out at this silver event, right?
You played disc golf. Not? You played stroke play disc golf. You played the same sport you play the rest of the year.
Yeah, but like, why not? Why not just mix it up? It's
why
not
mix
bad.
It up?
One event. Well, because I think you could create a really big buzz around one event being a match play event. I think people would like watching head to head matchups.
You can do that with an exhibition event.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
It's not the same, but then I think you either have to match play tour or have an exhibition event. You don't randomly show up to the middle of the season basketball and the Miami Heat are playing Golden State Warriors 3-on-3 for one game. Doesn't make any sense.
That's way different, though. That is way different. But you when you get to the playoffs, so you have like a series, which is different than how the normal season works, where you just play one game and you're done.
But you're still playing basketball. You didn't change the game.
Yeah.
You're still playing 5-on-5 basketball. You didn't change the game.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not like out of nowhere, the goal's 14 feet for one game.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, I would say, obviously, it's a little bit different than like having a tournament that's 3 rounds, having a tournament that's 4 rounds. But I think golf match play is a big skins. I think is exhibition. I don't think skins ever is as serious a thing. Skins should always be fun, charity, exhibition, that. But I think match play in golf can be a very, very competitive style of golf. And I would not be opposed if they're like, hey, we're gonna do one silver event this year. That's gonna be a match play. It's gonna be the top 50 players in the world in a bracket. These are how the points are gonna break down. I would not be opposed to that.
I would.
It's like, whatever. I mean, we already have so many events right now. What's another event to throw out some points, right? You've got this is a good one. Sparks Payton wants to know how long it would take for Hunter to be a tour level player if he actually trained for it.
Starting today with today's field?
Starting today, if you just were like, I'm going to put all my effort, all my money, everything into being a tour player.
What do we mean by tour player?
You cash once on tour. Like you go to all the events.
Cash once?
Yeah.
I could cash once in like a year and a half. Maybe a year.
All right.
Cash once. But like to try to survive on tour, it's going to take several years of dedication. Like I don't even know
survive
if I like,
on,
like that's something we're like
different. Yeah,
that's what I was saying. Like I wouldn't consider someone who cashes once on tour a tour player.
Probably not, but I was just trying to give you a realistic goal.
Because like cash on tour, if I cherry pick the event and the practice my butt off for a year, like there's
well,
a coin
see what
flip,
you
like,
would have,
a chance.
Let's see what you would have had to shoot to cash at New World. And again, ratings are inflated in this scenario. You would have had to shoot 4 over.
What was the average rating?
So it was like that? Right around like a 985. No, 988 probably.
I could technically do that tomorrow.
All right.
I've averaged my best tournament ever. I averaged 10.32.
There you go.
So that's I don't think that means anything. I don't think cashing one event. No, I don't think cashing one event means anything. I think
the easiest event to cash at all time.
Yeah, I think tour pro would be like you survive on tour and like there's no telling. Now, if you ask me that question about like 3 years ago tour, then I'd say give me like a year.
We'll have to play that course when we do the Jacksonville trip or Florida trip or whatever. We'll have to play New World. That'll be a fun one to see how you and Trevor do on.
Yeah.
Because I think it actually probably suits your game decently, honestly. Okay. So Logan Snyder wants me to walk through my plan to lose weight over the offseason. Losing weight is literally the easiest thing ever. Hunter, you can chime in too because obviously you got into running a lot the last couple of years. Literally all you have to do is keep track of how much you're eating. And it's going to suck at the beginning, but you got to keep track of how many calories you're taking in. If you're like seriously like trying to lose weight, keep track of how many calories you're taking in. There's a bunch of calorie calculators that you can go online, say your height, say your age, say your weight, say how much you're going to be working out. And it can kind of just give you a rough estimate, if you will, of like how many calories you need to be intaking, what your macros should be. So like how much protein, carbs, I'm blanking on the third macro. Protein, carbs, fat, you need to be intaking. So that way you're not just like, yeah, maybe you're only supposed to eat 2,000 calories, but you're eating 2,000 like calories and
crap
carbs.
Calories.
Yeah, that's not great. So you just keep track of that. Make sure you're not overeating and juicing up your calories, especially if you eat out. That's a crazy thing. You go to like a Chili's and get like the Cajun chicken pasta being like, oh, I'm eat healthy. That thing might be like, you might eat that and like have 200 calories the rest of the day. Like that thing's probably like 2,100 calories. And then work out. So like run, bike, go to the gym, lift weights, do an activity, probably 3 to 5 times a week, the weight will start coming off. It's pretty simple. It really is simple.
You just have to
like
be dedicated to it.
That's the thing. There's a difference between simple and easy. Simple
correct.
In the sense of where it's not difficult. And
no, it's not
have
rocket
the idea
science.
Of what you need to do.
Yeah.
But if it was easy,
even what you described,
there
is
would
probably
be a
more
lot
complex
less,
than like what you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I
nitty gritty need to do. Like if you just watch what you eat, work out, you're gonna lose weight. But then, like if you're in my shoes, you work out so that you don't have to watch what you eat, and you can stay the same
correct.
Weight. That's
you
my
can
goal.
Do that as well.
That's where I'm at currently. Yeah. I want to be able to eat pizza and dessert, so I just run a lot.
Yep, and that's you can do that when you're running a lot. All right, Clinton, I'm already down 2 pounds. I'm already down 2 pounds. So we're making moves here. K Pippert 11. Not sure where you stand on this, but I think giving added value to the silver events is the wrong direction. I think the Pro Tour needs to end up being just the elite events and majors. Silver Tour should be turned into a qualifying tour for the Pro Tour card. Thoughts, Hunter?
I mean, I agree overall. I think the silver events kind of is a weird thing because, like, long-term in the sport, where does it fit, right? Like, why would we want events that you're, like, not as encouraged to go to, but, like, they still are kind of important? Like, it's a weird fit. I always thought the silver event was going to break off as a qualifying series, but now they're starting their own qualifying series. So, like, long-term, I feel like the silver events need to either be elite events or go on the qualifying tour. Like, I don't think it really makes sense to have these, like, random events that are just worth 50% points. Like, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, you don't really, if you're running the tour, you don't really want to let people know, like, this event's not that important.
Yeah.
And this event's more important. Same thing with, like, the Elite Plus and the Elite events. Like, now the Elite events are just not that as much important as the Elite Plus. Obviously, yeah. The majors, sure, the majors are always going to hold more weight. But underneath the majors, ideally, if you're trying to run a tour and try to sell sponsorships, right? Like, it's going to be a lot harder to sell a sponsor on a silver event when you yourself are going out and telling people, and it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
So I could see down the road of trying to just, like, eliminate that. And just, obviously, you're going to have some events that are going to be more important than others. Like, we talked about this on a podcast previously, but yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think a qualifying tour is definitely a cool thing as well. I don't know how that would all work out and who would be in charge.
They've announced
it, but that would be cool.
2024. That's happening this year for 2024. It's not the full tour, but they're
didn't really announce
the
events or
they're accepting
really
applications for the events right now. They don't
know
the events.
They haven't really announced, like, not that much information has come out. That's what I'm saying. I'm looking forward to seeing how it all fits together. But that'll be exciting to kind of pay attention to, like, you can see who's popping off on the tour and be like, oh, this guy's gonna be a player next year.
Yeah.
Last one from Z Indy. Is disc golf better than golf? Disc golf advantages. Takes less time to play. Much cheaper. Much better for the environment. Ability to play more interesting spots. Multiple curves in one throw.
I agree with, like, most of it, minus the more interesting spots. I feel like golf courses a lot of times are in, like, the coolest places in the world. But I think that you just can't compare golf and disc golf at the end of the day. Because, like, they're two different sports. Really. Like, yes, golf's more expensive and all of that, but, like, I can't go play disc golf and scratch my golf itch, and I can't go play golf and scratch my disc golf itch. Like, they're just two different things. If I want to play golf, I want to play golf. I don't want to go play disc golf.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, too, like, the idea of, oh, like, this is super, like, just because something is super easy to do, playing a game of solitaire, very easy to do. You can do it by yourself. You just need a deck of cards.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to do it.
Doesn't make it better than poker.
Correct. You still have to have the enjoyment factor of it. So, I mean, I do think, like, the barrier to entry to disc golf is low, and that's obviously better than something like surfing, for example, right? Like, you have to be in a specific spot in the world to be able to surf. You can't just roll out of bed and be like, I want to surf today and be able to do that. So obviously there's advantages of, like, low barrier to entry. But again, at the end of the day, there are some things that the majority of people are going to like doing more than others. And so, you know,
it is what it is.
It is what it is, man.
There you have it. That's the show.
That's all I got. That's all I got.
Thank you all so much for tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed.
Pick up these hoodies. Pick up these sweatshirts.
Be sure, keep in touch. Keep in touch. That doesn't make sense. Keep an eye on Foundation social media to figure out when all those are dropping. Should be very soon.
Let's send people over to the email list if they haven't joined.
That's true.
They need to join.
If you go to foundationdiscs.com, scroll down.
That'll be the first thing that we'll send out to know that this is coming out.
Yeah. Go to foundationdisc.com, scroll down. There's a little block that says enter your email. You do that, and you'll be in the know, not only for the Christmas hoodie, but also you'll know about the Black Friday deals coming up, many releases that happen every week, bunch of stuff coming. So you're going to want to be on the email list to get in touch or get – why I keep saying in touch. We're going to keep in touch with you and let you know about everything coming down the pipeline. So there you have it. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next week.